Interview with John Naggs, KNAGGS, not for attribution without permission.
John, give us a little bit about your own background, political involvement.
Well, I guess the first involvement here in Austin was I worked the legislature in 1961 while I was finishing up my journalism degree at the University of Texas. And I was a volunteer at that time in Senator Tower's first election. That was the spring of 1961. Subsequently, I became a correspondent here in the state capital of United Press International and covered politics and legislature, state government, and covered the 1962 campaign here in Texas. Was hired as public relations director for the state Republican Party in 1963. And I held that position for about 4 years. And summer of 1967, I became a partner in a political consulting firm with Marvin Collins, who had been executive director of the state Republican Party for about 5 years previous to that. So in summer of 67, Collins and I opened a political consulting firm, and we were active in a number of races, mostly here in Texas, although we did handle a governor's race in Virginia in 1969. That was Linwood Fulton campaign, which Marvin managed.
What was your firm called?
Collins, Naggs & Associates. Right. We both had worked for Senator Towers' re-election in 1966 in our party headquarters capacities, and then after 1970 campaigns, Marvin left the business and I continued on as John Naggs and Associates, and my firm participated in the 72 campaign for Senator Tower re-election campaign. Other campaigns we worked in were Paul Eggers for governor, 68 and 70, George Bush in 70 for U.S. Senate. A number of legislative races. We were fortunate in handling the first Republican victories in Austin, Houston, in the legislature. And also we participated in the first state Senate victory by a Republican in Dallas. We worked in a number of municipal races and so forth, which I don't think would be of interest in your study because those are nonpartisan in Texas.
Did you work in Steelman's race?
No, I personally did not. As you know, Marvin Collins is now Alan Steelman's administrative assistant.
Did Marvin work in that race?
I'm sure he, you know, played a prominent role in Alan's re-election this time.
No, I mean in the
previous one. I'm frankly not sure. I'm trying to remember now. 72. I believe he did. He and I were not associated in 72. 1970 was the last year we were associated together, and I kind of lost track of exactly what he was doing in 72, but I think he did participate in Steelman's campaign.
How would you characterize the growth or lack of growth of the Republican Party during that period? It really didn't get going until 1960, did it?
Well, not really until 61. I think the election of Senator Tower would would be the more or less a starting point. There was a fairly serious effort made by Thad Hutchison in 1957 in that special election in which Ralph Yarborough was elected. This is before my time, but it was a three-way race. I'm sure you know Thad Hutchison was Republican and Ralph Yarborough was a liberal Democrat, and Martin Dyess Sr. was a conservative Democrat. And under the old rules, which have been changed, but under the old rules of plurality, won without a runoff, and this is when Ralph Yarborough won. But I just mentioned this race because I think Thad Hutchison made a fairly serious race, but of course was unsuccessful. Tower, of course, did mount a good race in 1960 against Lyndon Johnson for the Senate seat, and then in 61 was elected. And I think that was kind of the starting point for a lot of the organizational building that really went on in the early 60s, was the entire 61 victory.
How do you see it now, party? Let me go back. Did you anticipate, starting in the early 60s, particularly the 66 victory, that it was going to keep on building more state legislative seats and so on, more congressmen?
Of course, you're never satisfied, and our party growth has not been dramatic in terms of congressional seats or, for that matter, really legislative seats, although we finally picked up quite a few as a result of the court decision on single-member districts. I felt like the assassination of President Kennedy and the attendant circumstances, the tremendous emotionalism of it having occurred in Dallas, in the state, and the ascendancy of Lyndon Johnson to the presidency had a lot to do, and plus the what you might call a canonization at that time of John Connally as governor hurt the Republican Party quite a bit. I think that held us back from 63, say, to 66. I think after 66, the ball was seen to be rolling a little bit. The re-election of Tower was accomplished with a good margin. There were, let's see, I think two congressional seats picked up in that election, despite the fact Johnson was still president and Connally was still governor. So I thought things were looking up, but we were unable, for whatever reasons, to capitalize dramatically, put it that way. You know, we never broke through in the governor's race. We've never unseated a lot of entrenched congressmen, and we've made modest gains in the legislature, not what I'd call dramatic.
Why not?
Well, I think the ground rules are one of the reasons. The multi-member districting, I'm not familiar with other states, some of them, but not many. But, you know, up until just 72, well, we only had single-member districts in one county in this state, Harris County. And we got them in Dallas and San Antonio, Bexar County. Now, this made a lot of difference. We started picking up seats, obviously. But we still have not got single-member districts in the rest of the urban areas of the state. And frankly, I think it's going to be very difficult for Republicans to be elected in these urban communities until we have single-member districts. It's too expensive. Look at the... I participated in this federal suit where we got single-member districts in Houston and, San Antonio and Dallas. And my testimony was on the fact that it's just absolutely prohibitive to expect a person to file and be elected in Dallas, Texas, and try to raise $50,000 to get elected to a job that pays $400 a month, which was, frankly, what we were faced with. That's why we weren't electing people from Dallas. We'd elected one legislator up there in about the last three or four elections. Even though Dallas
is... Have you been able to attract candidates?
Well, since we had a single-member district, you see, everything changed.
But you have difficulty with the multi-member districts?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. See, it depends on what county you're operating in Dallas. As I said, we went from one to seven or eight now, just bingo, in the next election, simply because they could run in a contained district and didn't have to raise that huge amount of money to win, you know. But let's look at Tarrant County, Fort Worth. We don't have a single legislator there. Even though Tarrant County, we don't have a representative, we have a state senator, but not a state representative. And that county will go Republican in a Republican year just as, sure as night follows day. But having to run countywide, I think, is a tremendous barrier to
You anticipate that's going to change either by court?
There's another suit.
By suit?
There's a suit
right
now.
But not by legislation?
No.
What did 74 do to the party?
Well, 74 is a paradoxical year in Texas. The statewide candidates were badly defeated, as I'm sure you know. Had a net loss of one congressman, lost a conservative panhandle Republican, Bob Price. On the other hand, at the local level, two tremendous breakthroughs. One, the county judges race in both Harris County and Dallas County. Two biggest in the state.
What is the role of the county judge?
Well, pretty powerful. It's, there's a lot of patronage involved. And, he presides over the county commissioner's court, which is comprised of four commissioners, and they run the county government. And
so he, in effect, is the chief administrative officer of the county?
Of the county, that's correct.
Does he have any judicial function?
Not really. Very light on that. But he's a pretty powerful man, politically, traditionally in this state. And these were unusual circumstances. There were hints of scandal, what have you, in both courthouses. But nonetheless, the fact is, people in those communities were willing to vote for their first Republican county judge. I think it's going to help us politically.
So you broke through at that level, but you lost one congressman and you lost in the state legislature.
State legislature, yeah, was a net loss of two, I believe. Reelected. There's only one. There are three Republican state senators. Only one of them was up this time. You know, they draw for two or four-year terms. Only one of them was up. And she won. That's Ms. Andujar from Fort Worth. She won barely. She won a very close election. She was reelected. In the House of Representatives, I think the net loss was two out of, I guess it's 17 now. I have a hard time keeping up. Lost one seat in San Antonio. Lost one in Harris County, Pasadena, Texas, you know, outside Houston. And picked up. No, pardon me. I believe the net loss was only one because it picked up one in the Panhandle.
Other than the multi-member districts, are there any other factors or variables that make it difficult for the Republican Party to grow in Texas?
Yeah, I think so. I think the business community, business and industrial community has traditionally stayed with the so-called conservative Democrat faction in state politics. I think this impedes our Republican opportunities because invariably the conservative Democrat candidate for governor is much, much better financed than the Republican, which may be a paradox in other states, but in this state, I think this, you could prove it by just going up there and look at those figures of Secretary of State's office, that they're getting a lot more money. And they still retain the labor support and what have you, the traditional Democratic support, which doesn't want to identify or participate with the Republican side. So they're having their cake and eating it too, so to speak. Now, there have been a few exceptions to this, where some of the supporters of Senator Yarbrough and some more independent liberals have come over and openly, not come over, but I mean they've openly helped the Republican candidate, not only U.S. Senate, but also for governor occasionally. And this, when this happens, you know, you have a little more interesting ballgame. But when a conservative Democrat candidate for governor has got all that money, plus the organizational support, plus the tradition in the state, plus most of the newspaper, makes up a political campaign, you know who's going to win most of
the time. Is it an oversimplification to say that the strategy to build the Republican Party in Texas was to make it the conservative party?
I think the old theory was, certainly in the early 60s, when the Goldwater candidacy was blooming, this was the idea. This was the idea to make the conservatives a home in the Republican Party. And, of course, a lot of this was pegged to the Goldwater candidacy, you know. You're a conservative, you ought to be for Barry Goldwater, you ought to be a Republican, you know, blah, blah, blah. And in 62, I think this was having some effect. John Tyler had been elected U.S. Senator, so you had the credibility there of having a senator, and here's a man who's been elected. And I think this may have been one of the main reasons that Jack Cox was willing to switch parties. He had been run for governor. Democratic primary in 1960 against the incumbent Price Daniel, and he switched parties and ran as a Republican in 1962 and ran a very credible race against John Connally, who was a tremendous candidate. I covered that campaign, the Cox-Connally race, and a couple of real good candidates, but I think Connally had a, you know, he was really good on TV, and he was, young John Connally was really quite a candidate. But anyway, Cox, I thought, ran a very credible race, got about 46% running for governor. But to try to answer your question, it was a very conservative party at that time, or at least that was the, I think, the main thrust of it, yeah.
Where is it now?
Well, I think it's still basically conservative. It's not, there's not that kind of pitch, so to speak.
But the, you know, the strategy was to get conservative Democrats to move into the Republican
That's
Party.
Correct.
And John Connally's effort in the last couple of years was to do that. But apparently nothing happened when he switched.
Well...
Or did something happen?
I think, you know, I think 74...
I'm talking about 72 when he headed the Democrats for Nixon.
Well,
and then,
okay, well,
and
well let's look at... Let's
73,
look,
switched
Let's look
parties.
At 72. Yeah, he didn't switch parties in 73, and the effect would have been the 74 election. But in 72, you know, his... open support for Nixon and all certainly was very beneficial to Nixon in this state. There's no question about that. 74, you know, we just never know because...
let's go back to 72 just a minute.
Yeah,
there's a question I want to ask about that. Here was Connally had been in Nixon's cabinet and he came back and he was very active in the Nixon campaign. And... have you seen Neil Pearce's book?
What's the name of it?
The Great Plains States.
The Great Plains States. He has a chapter on Texas in which I don't recall if he makes the thesis himself or quotes someone. He may quote someone else. Maybe Nancy Palm, I think it was. Blaming power for, in effect, keeping Republicans from making a broader challenge in 72. More congressional seats, more legislative seats, making a real across-the-board challenge, in which she attributed to blamed it, in effect blamed it on Tower for putting the brakes on because of fear it would bring out more Democratic opposition in his race.
And siphon off more money.
And siphon off more money from his race.
From his race.
I don't know of any conscious...
the analogy is that that's the same thing Yarborough did when he was senator.
Right. Yarborough discouraged liberals from running butt off because it would hurt his candidacy.
Right.
Well, let me go back to 1966, because I'm on familiar ground in both those races, 66 or 72. I'm not 61. I was just a volunteer and all, but I didn't really know what party leadership was up to. But in 66... well, going into the 66 election, go back to 64, you know, the defeat was terrific. We lost both congressmen in Texas. We had no congressmen at all. We lost, I can't remember exactly, I think we had 10 legislative seats at the time, lost all but one. Now let me go on. The loss was absolutely devastating. Okay, the party leadership, in concert with Senator Tower, and at that time, you know, Texas had a very strong Republican state chairman. I'm sure you've dealt with him or known about him, was Peter O'Donnell. And O'Donnell and Tower and the rest of them, who just paid no decisions, felt like it was really going to be tough to get back up into that 66 race, and it did look pretty bad. So, at that time, there was no effort made whatsoever to make a broad challenge. They didn't want a strong gubernatorial race. They didn't want to take them, you know, on up and down the line for obvious reasons. It had been counterproductive. So that's possibly what some other people may refer to in relation to 72, but I don't think it's true. In 72, everybody that I was working with in the Tower campaign pretty well took it for granted. The turnout was going to be high anyway. It didn't make any difference as far as local contests concerned. It was going to be a big presidential year turnout, so it wasn't that kind of thing. there was a spirited contest for the Republican gubernatorial nomination. So that race was going to be run anyway. It didn't make much difference. I can't tell you much about the other races because I didn't pay much attention to them below the gubernatorial level, but I think there was, oh yes, I did. That's right. I remember one. The state treasurer's race was run pretty hard that year. Got 46%. But I don't agree. I think there was quite a bit of effort made in 72. You had president, U.S. Senate, governor, and state treasurer.
But you had the other constitutional offices weren't contested, nor were a number of legislative seats, nor was about close to half, I think, of the congressional delegation.
In congressional, I honestly cannot remember. I know, let's see. I just flat can't remember, but again, if I were sitting up there in Fort Worth and you know, somebody came to ask me to run for House of Representatives up there, I'd say no. Because if I called an ad agency to find out a budget and they told me what I needed to get known in Fort Worth, I wouldn't run. Some of them did. But, you know, I think they're foolish. I mean, not foolish, but I think it's, you know, so uphill, it's unreasonable.
Even with Nixon coattails to ride on in 72?
I don't think I think your ticket splitter syndrome comes into play. People don't vote that way in the state. They wander all over that ballot. Our state representative here in Austin, Maurice Handley, outpolled Nixon in Travis County. And I can give you all kind of examples of ticket splitting in that election. Sure, Nixon got the biggest vote, but he didn't. You don't necessarily have all of much coattail effect.
Yeah, what could you say Tower has done to build the party since he's been this letter?
Number one, he's won re-election twice, which has been, I think, extremely important in this state. He has, on a number of occasions, lent his support to other candidates, both for fundraising and, you know, rallies and direct mail and so forth, which has been I think, of some help in some of those races I mentioned where we were getting our breakthroughs in the legislature. As I recall, the senator lent his name to virtually all of those campaigns.
Is there a Tower campaign organization in Texas, or does he use the traditional Republican apparatus? Is there a Republican organization throughout the whole state?
Yeah, but I can't tell you. If you haven't already scheduled a visit to Republican State Headquarters, you'd have to get your stacks over there, because I just don't remember how many county chairmen they have. But
is that organization separate from what you could call the Tower organization?
Well, it was in 66 and 72. I don't know exactly what I can explain this right. The door-to-door canvass that was conducted in 1966 was conducted through, I think, the Republican Party for Tower. Now, Tower's campaign people, you know, had a lot of input into how they wanted to canvass and how many precincts and targeting and all that. But I think they used the regular party organization, as I recall. In 72, there wasn't a door-to-door canvass. It was all done by telephone, and it was combined with Nixon's operation. They were called Nixon Tower Phone Banks. And I really can't remember whether they used regular Republican volunteers or Tower volunteers or what, but I'm sure a lot of those people were, you know, both kind of meshed together. But both in 66 and 72, Tower did have a separate, of course, headquarters and staff.
What I'm getting at, did he organize the state the way the Democrats do? I mean, they pretty well organize, pretty well ignore the party apparatus and set up their own personal organizations, and each statewide candidate's got his own organization.
No, I don't think so. Certainly not in 66. I remember that campaign as far as organizational work better than I can in 72, because in 66 I was working in Republican headquarters. I was more familiar with how they did all that. I know they went through a regular Republican apparatus in 66, and in 72, I just flat cannot remember. I suspect since they were combined, Nixon Tower phone banks, I suspect they were ad hoc organizations, so probably not a regular organization. They pretty much had to be for those canvases.
You know, why did it take so much money? What was it, $2.4 million in 72? Howard O'Wynn, when he had the Nixon tag going with him. I have trouble understanding why an incumbent senator spending all that money with Nixon on the ticket, running almost a joint campaign. He didn't win it by very much.
By over 300,000 votes. Tarred in. Well, I just, you know, again, point out to you, race after race after race in this state, there is a way a lot of ticket splitting. And I think he pretty well had to go out and, whether you say you're tagging to Nixon or not, I think just some fairly large percentage of voters out there, they're going to make up their mind independently at the top of the ticket.
What's the fact it's a big state?
Oh, Lord, yeah, it's
a big
state.
Fulbright spent $900,000 last year in the Democratic primary.
Well, you know, we have more media.
But it's asserted that that was the most money ever spent in a Senate election anywhere, period. What Tower spent in 72.
Is that right? Well, I understood. I can't remember exactly what. I was thinking Connally spent over $2 million running for governor back in 62. I'm
thinking for the United States Senate.
Yeah, I know, for the United States Senate. I'm just thinking about in this state. You know, we have more media markets than any state in the Union. We've got 56 commercial TV stations in this state. When you start looking at a media budget here, and you just chew up money just as fast as you can write it on a piece of paper. Extremely expensive. Travel's gone up, I don't know how much, but you know how much it takes to, you know, fly around this state. It's terrific. And I've forgotten how much was spent on media in 72, but substantial amounts for Tower. But it's, well, another example, I'm sure you've studied, you know, it's higher a kite in San Antonio, or New York, California, but TV spots in Dallas are now up on some of that prime time to $800 for 30 seconds. Terrific. We spent about $600,000 this governor's race and hardly even made a dent. You know, people barely knew that Granberry was running.
If you wanted to put on a half-hour documentary on every TV station in Texas, what would it run, roughly?
Well, just to hit every market would cost you about $18,000-$20,000. It'd just be one station. If you wanted to saturate them, well, not quite three times that, because some of them don't have three stations. But well, some of them got more than three than that. Maybe three times that. $60,000, something like that. Plus production.
You detect any change in campaign techniques since 61?
Yes. Yes. I think the major changes are, and I suspect this is true of other states, but I think the most dramatic thing since 61 to today is that more and more people, and I'd say this is probably particularly true in suburbs, really turned off on politics. It wasn't just this year. This year was the worst, obviously, from the turnout. You know, in this state, it was just unbelievably low, right, barely over 30%. But back about 66, I guess, my former partner, Marvin, and I were already talking about it. It just seemed like it was getting harder and harder to get people to come out to any kind of political events, you know, particularly in the cities. They're just getting nearly all their politics off television and newspapers, I guess, and very distant, a barrier there or something, lack of interest, whatever you want to call it. But I think it's getting more and more pronounced as time goes by. So that to communicate effectively in Texas in a political campaign, you have to use, I think, a lot of media realistically, particularly in the metro urban areas.
Well, that means you have to spend a lot of money.
I think that's correct.
Further mean that you know, some people charge that big money controls Texas politics. But they decide who the candidates will be. And that means it's going to be worse in the future.
Well, that's possible, unless there are tighter limits or controls put on spending and correspondingly more public service time made available, for instance, on television, maybe a little more extensive news coverage if that were the case. In gubernatorial races, for instance, I think it would improve the situation, take off some of the burden of having to raise much money. Otherwise, I would tend to agree. I think that in Briscoe's case, his first and first election and his re-election, he put a lot of money in there, and it's really helped him in major. But he's had the advantage, no question about it.
Why doesn't the big money go to the Republicans like it does in most states? You said, you know, the conservative Democrats get all the money.
Well, I think the world loves a winner, and they've been used to winning with conservative Democrats. There's never been a Republican elected to the governorship of Texas in 100 years. And, perhaps if a Republican won, things would change. But
does Tower get some of that money?
Yes. But you see, he's a winner. And he's been in. And he's a known quantity. And he's, of course, now well-established. He's been in since 61, in 14 years of spring. So, and, of course, he has a conservative voting record. And he's quite acceptable to the business industrial community.
Do you see the Republican Party growing much in this state in the next 10 years?
I still think the key is a governor's race. I think if we could elect a governor, I think it'd change the ball game.
Do you see that coming?
Well,
but let me ask you a question about that, John, because Arkansas elected a Republican governor, Florida elected a Republican governor, Virginia elected a Republican governor, Tennessee elected a Republican governor, but you know, in all those states in the last couple of years, Republicans at the legislative level, the numbers have diminished.
Well, of course, I'm not familiar
and
with all.
And they lost control of the governor's chair.
In Virginia. Godwin won. Following Holton.
Godwin won, but he lost 5 seats in the legislature when he won.
Well,
in North Carolina, they got wiped out this year.
Cream.
In the legislature?
They went from 15 senators to 1 and 35 representatives to 8 or 9.
Well, to what did you attribute that? Watergate fallout or what? Couldn't have been any state issues that compelling, could it?
It's open to interpretation.
But the point is it happened.
Well,
what were considered to be solid Republican gains were just wiped out.
Well, all I can say is you have, at least from my experience, I feel that major associations, people who really exert a lot of influence and are really active in state government, are very hesitant to support Republicans because they don't think they can win. And I think that winning a governor's race would be pretty dramatic, maybe relating it to the Tower experience. But it would provide a breakthrough. It would provide a lot of interest. It would stimulate a lot of interest in the party. It might get more people to be willing to run on the Republican ticket. All of these things, I think we'd get more and better legislative candidates. But let me mention one thing. Now, back to the legislature. Again, I don't know all the other states at all, but I think in this state, we have two significant barriers. One is the filing deadline, which is so early, you know, in this state, first week in February. It's hard to get people to think about running. so far ahead of...
Why is it so early here?
Well, that's
the
law.
It benefits the incumbents.
Yeah, sure does. And the other thing is the salary. See, I've gone out and tried to recruit candidates before for the party. And it's easy to recruit somebody to run for city council or county commissioner than it is as a legislator. Because even though you think it's a more prestigious position, perhaps, but when a man has to sit down, and bear it in mind, both Republicans are business and professional people, they have to sit down and think about splitting their home between Austin and wherever, and time away from their profession or business for at least 4 months a year, maybe more, depending on special sessions. And all for $400 a month, you'll find your prospect list dwindling in a hurry. So it's hard to get people to even really sit down and get serious about running for legislature on a public ticket for a number of things. And then this thing I mentioned about if you're in Tarrant County, Fort Worth, and the guy says, well, how much it costs from advertising campaigns? Well, I think I've got to spend $30,000. You know, possibly raise that much money. And he can't. So
you think
three strikes you're out.
The key is the election of a Republican governor.
I think
until
it would
you
help.
Get that.
I think it would help. I think the
you're not gonna be able to build.
Well, I think let's take several things. One, the election of a Republican governor, I think, would help immeasurably. Number two would be the extension of single member legislative districts throughout the urban areas of the state.
Is that apparently coming?
It's back in the courts. We're hopeful it'll happen, but you know, you never know. But it's going on up to Supreme Court again. The other thing, I think, is changing the filing deadline and the pay.
Is there any move to raise legislative salaries?
We had a vote on it, takes a constitutional amendment. We had a vote on it about a year ago, and it went down the chute again. We're going to pay $15,000 a year. But it went down the chute. So, I don't know when it'll ever happen. You know, you got a lot of staffers on legislative. The staffs over there making a lot more than the boss, you know.
And it does require a constitutional amendment.
Yes, it does.
That makes it a lot tougher.
Yes.
What was the provision in the proposed new constitution on legislative salaries? Did that include an increase?
There's so much arguing over that. I can't remember now whether it was that or a pay commission. I think it was a pay commission. They were going to set up to set legislative salaries, but the whole thing went down the chute.
Yeah,
you know, so. Moot point.
What did a poll show in Texas? You know, when you people identifying themselves in terms of self-perception, what percentage identify as Republican?
Very, very small. I'm trying to remember the last DMI poll that was run in the state that I'm familiar with this fall. It was only about 15-16%, something like that.
It's about the same as the rest of the South.
What about
you recall what it was for Democrats?
And independents?
I think it was 50 some odd for Democrats. Maybe 56, something like that. And the rest, independent.
So that was this fall?
Yeah.
Do you know if that reflected some increase for Democrats over the past?
I believe it did. DMI
probably,
was in here.
I would think it would.
DMI was in here in 72, and I just can't remember those figures off the top of my head, but I think it was a slight loss on Republicans, and I think Torrance figured that was probably due to Watergate. Not as many wanted to salute when you raised the banner right there. But we get a lot of questions that are y'all do a lot of research, you know what I'm talking about in the South, but we get a lot of questions that are phrased like Republicans versus the Democrats in this community and that community, as though you had an identifiable two factions pretty close by, and even in Dallas, you know, which is traditionally the most Republican city in the state, I think up there is only about 20% will openly identify as Republican. Their behavior Republican. They do vote Republican most elections.
Well, they have for a long time, haven't they?
Yeah.
Why is it they don't identify? Because of the primaries?
Because of Watergate this year. Do you know if it was any change, significant change between 72 and 74? You said you thought it was a slight difference.
I think it was a slight decrease, but I'm not positive about that. Now, the primary turnout was down. Of course, it was down both parties. But that was the lowest Republican primary vote in several elections this past year. But the turnout was so low this time, you know, you got to be careful. I think I'm drawing a lot of conclusions because Eggers running for governor in 1970, losing on a Republican ticket, got more votes than Briscoe got winning this time. You know, despite
four votes for governor and U.S. Senate.
Well, see, Eggers has run twice.
Benson's up in 76.
Yeah, Benson's up next time. I haven't heard any real noises. I guess if anybody came out and really made a serious race on Benson, it pretty much had to be some Republican congressman, but I don't know who it would be.
So you'd have to go to the existing delegation and find somebody for that?
I would think so.
What about Governor? 78. What I'm getting at, is there any other way for the party to develop leadership other than the congressional district and the state legislature?
Well, assuming that, as I said, Eggers has run twice. I don't much think he'd go again. So it'd probably be Granberry, if he wanted to run again, would make a go at it, or probably somebody out of the legislature there. Two or three of them in there that are pretty sharp and ambitious. I'd say Ray Hutchinson would be probably the most likely. He announced last time for governor. Ran about 3 or 4 weeks and decided better of it and got out. At that time, Hank Grover was still running, and Granberry, and one other fellow. There were four of them in there. And then Hutchinson dropped out, and Grover dropped out, wound up as Granberry and one other guy. Granberry won. But I would, I guess Hutchinson would be probably most likely. He's from Dallas, and real sharp guy. He's only been in one term, but he's smart as a whip. Probably is going to be a factor in whatever they do in the legislature. We have a good state senator from Dallas named Ike Harris. He considered running for lieutenant governor this last time, decided not to. Very attractive candidate. But,
how come the Republicans decided to run somebody against the state treasurer?
72. This is a guy I used to work with, Maurice Angley, that ran against the state treasurer, Jesse James. James was vulnerable. He was kind of thought to be, and there wasn't anything illegal put out on him, but he was thought to be somewhat tainted by the Sharpstown scandal. You know, that shook up Texas politics so much. And, I think this is one reason Angley decided to run against him. It wasn't the Republican hierarchy or anything. It was just the state representative thought he might get him because he beat him because of the Sharpstown thing. I believe it was the main reason he thought he had a chance to win. He didn't spend much money. You talk about
money. But he got 46%?
He got 46%. He spent about $150,000, which isn't much in his state, but and I guess you could say maybe he was helped by Nixon's candidacy, but again, the ticket splitting was very interesting because he ran ahead of Nixon and Tower. Not only here, but in a couple of other places. But most dramatically here that I recall. So again, I think it points out that this state is full of ticket splitters, full of independents. They do tend to vote Democratic, though, if they feel like that guy's got the edge. If the Republican's a real good candidate, can appeal, you know, an independent, broad-based type of campaign, I think he's got a crack at it, depending on
the
year.
The Republicans in the legislature work as an active caucus?
Mm-hmm. No.
Is that a weakness?
Oh, you can argue both ways. My experience in the legislature here is that the more substantive issues are argued over rural-urban lines than they are party lines. It's very rare that there's anything really party-oriented. Maybe stuff on the election code, yeah, something like that. But most of the other issues, there are not enough Republicans to be a, you know, a real two-party type factor. And if you have, again, rural-urban issues seem to be more dominant there.
You know, do you know why the Republicans in the legislature don't serve more as a watchdog capacity?
Oh, I think they try.
Have you done anything that's gotten any attention in that regard?
Well, to be real frank, I think after the Sharpstown scandal hit, everybody up there has been pretty careful. I don't know whether there's anything wrong going on up there or not, but that was quite a scandal. And, it really shook the foundations up there.
Who was the land commissioner before Armstrong?
A guy named Jerry Sadler.
And his problems weren't related to Sharpstown, right?
No.
Is he the one that went to the penitentiary?
No, I don't think he ever went to the penitentiary. He was always controversial. He'd do things like, a photographer, a new photographer, try to come take his picture, he'd grab it, shove it, stuff like that. People claim they couldn't find him for 2 weeks. He'd be gone to East Texas hunting or something. Wouldn't tend the store. I can't remember all those things now. He was very controversial, though. Bob Armstrong was a nice, clean-cut young fellow, and he walked right on in.
What do you see as the strongest Democrats race for governor?
I'm not on tape now.
Was it a surprise to Republicans after Connally switched, before he got into his other problem, but after his switch, that he did not attract a lot of Democrats with him? Wasn't this supposed to be the real big problem?